Hello, I'm Nigel Lithgow, and I was the executive producer of Pop Stars, My Idol, Pop Idol, and American Idol. And these are my Idol memories. Welcome to Idol Memories this week. Now, last week, you'll probably remember, Jim Vararos got cut from the show, then reinstated, and eventually made it into the top 10 thanks to America's vote. Well, he is going to be joining me later on in the show to tell me how he felt when he got cut. But this week, it's all about semi-final 2 and who America will vote for. And this semi-final included Alexis Lopez from Modesto, California, Gil Sinue from Garfield, New Jersey, Angela Peel from Chicago, Illinois, A.J. Gill from Tacoma, Washington, Jasmine Lowry from Hempstead, New York, and Jamar, we never found out his last name, from Atlanta, Kelly Clarkson from Joshua, Texas, Justin Guarini from Doylestown, Philadelphia, Tania Taylor from Orange Park, Florida, and her friend Alexandra Bachelet from Miami, Florida. America was now going to hear the second 10 semifinalists and would then decide who would join the previous week's winners, Tamira Gray, Brian Starr, and Jim Vararos. The evening got off to a great start when Ryan and Brian were introducing the judges. Brian asked Simon if he was getting any fan mail, apart from the stuff from prison. Unfortunately, with the studio having no audience, the joke didn't get the applause it deserved. But it certainly made Simon laugh.
You threw that one away.
Showing that he still had a good sense of humor. And that was going to be needed a little later on in this show. The first to take the tiny stage in front of the judges was 17-year-old Alexis Lopez. She sang a great version of Gloria Gaynor's mega hit, I Will Survive. And without question, we all hoped she would survive. She was certainly really good looking and with a great voice too. Randy said,
I think it's probably the best I've seen you.
Paula agreed with Randy and thought Alexis had come out of her shell. Simon also agreed, but was disappointed with her song choice.
I think you have a fantastic voice. I think you look sensational. I wish you hadn't sung that song, because every time anyone sings that song, it sounds like a karaoke.
Well, I'm not sure where Simon goes to listen to his karaoke, but if the singers are as good as Alexis, it must be remarkable. Gil Sinue, the 23-year-old from New Jersey, was the next to perform with his version of Stevie Wonder's 1982 single, Ribbon in the Sky. Randy thought Gil had chosen a tough song to sing, but he'd done a good job with it. Paula repeated what she'd said to Alexis by saying that Gil had come out of his shell. It was obviously a very big shell with a lot of people in it. Simon gave him a sort of backhanded compliment by saying,
I don't think you look like the American Idol, but I think you sound like the American Idol.
I thought, well, if he sells enough records, he'll be able to afford to change his looks in Beverly Hills. And I'm sure Simon would have been able to recommend a good surgeon. I'm only kidding. I'm not really. 20-year-old Angela Peel sang that great Whitney Houston ballad from the Bodyguard movie, Run to You. I was quite expecting Paula to say that Angela had come out of her shell, but instead she said that she shined and was excellent. Randy also thought she was very good, and Simon reminded us that the week before he'd criticized Kelly Glover for doing a sound-alike version of Whitney's I Will Always Love You. However, he felt that Angela had made this song her own and followed up by telling her that she had an amazing voice. Coming out of a commercial break, Brian was sitting at a computer online to the Idol website with a post on it to Simon, which he duly read out.
I think Simon's great, but then I'm biased as I think he's very sexy, charming, and talented. Signed, Bruce from Miami. Right here.
I felt the interaction between Ryan, Brian, and Simon was really starting to happen. This is what we had in the UK with the two British hosts, Ant and Dec, who were constantly looking at how to make fun of Simon in a humorous way. Tania Taylor, the 21-year-old Floridian, took the stage to sing a George Benson ballad, The Greatest Love of All, which years later, I'm sure you remember, was covered by Whitney Houston. Her version was a little shouty, but Paula thought she'd done a nice job. Randy didn't think it was amazing, but I think Simon nailed it with...
I think that it was an ambitious thing because I don't think you're that kind of singer. I don't think you're that good.
Tania, rather cheekily, came straight back at Simon.
Let me hear you sing a note.
Simon pointed out rightly that he wasn't there to sing. He was there to judge. Tania's best friend, 20-year-old Alexandra Bachelier, and I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but she was following with Vanessa Williams' Save the Best for Last. Randy surprised us all by quoting one of Simon's comments.
That was definitely Miami karaoke to me.
Paula pointed out there was a lot of great talent sitting in the red room that she would be up against. Simon reminded her that even though she'd sung Save the Best for Last, she was neither the last nor the best. Alexandra stuck up for herself very bravely, though.
It's okay. I may not be the best for you, but I may be the best for someone else.
We all agreed with that. 19-year-old Jasmine Lowry chose a number written by Rod Temperton and sung by the British R&B artist Misha Paris. Quincy Jones and Tamia later covered it in America. The song was You Put a Move on My Heart. Paula thought Jasmine started rather nervously. Randy didn't think it was very good. And Simon yet again surprised us all.
I'm actually going to disagree with Randy. I thought it was brilliant.
Jamar, a 21-year-old from Atlanta who obviously didn't want us to know his last name, and that always made me think it must have been an awful name, like Jamar Humperdinck or Jamar Shufflebottom. Can you believe my maternal grandmother was a Shufflebottom? Anyway, back to Jamar. He'd chosen George Michael's wham hit, Careless Whisper. The irony was, although it had whisper in the title, he sang it very, very, very loudly. Randy thought the song didn't show off Jamar's personality, while Paula thought the key was too high, and Simon said, you didn't sing the song, you shouted it. Next up, 20-year-old Kelly Clarkson singing Respect. Originally written and recorded by Otis Redding, it had now become an Aretha Franklin anthem. Kelly was immaculate in her performance. She too, in my opinion, sang it a little too loudly, but her camera sense was outstanding. She knew where every shot was and eased herself beautifully between the cameras. It was as if she'd studied our director Bruce Gower's camera script. Who knows? Maybe she did. Randy thought her performance was very, very, very good. Paula happily complimented her by saying, you did us proud. While Simon calmly informed Kelly she'd got a good voice, but he didn't remember her. That would soon change. Justin Guarini, the 23-year-old from Philly, decided to sing Ribbon in the Sky that Gil had sung earlier. It was a totally different style to Gil's, and Paula, who, if you remember, was flustered and had to compose herself in Pasadena after Justin's performance, then remarked,
you gave it some quiet sincerity, and I really, really enjoyed your performance.
Thank you.
Randy thought it wasn't amazing, and Simon felt Gil sang it better, but that Justin had the X factor. Ryan and Brian wrapped up the show sitting with the contestants in the red room, something that they couldn't have done the previous week, as there was so much weeping and wailing from the kids due to the fact that Jim Vararis had just been shockingly cut from the program. Having been reinstated, of course, he went on to claim a place in the top 10. But who would be joining him from this semi-final? Before we get into the results, let me tell you about my new wireless earbuds from Raycon. So before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check them out. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are their best ones yet. With 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, They're perfect for conference calls or binging on podcasts, particularly my podcast. I personally love them, apart from the comfort, because they manage to completely transport me out of the environment I'm in to whatever I'm listening to. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet, with no dangling wires or stems to distract anyone during video calls. The company was co-founded by Ray J, and lots of celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Cardi B, Melissa Etheridge literally are obsessed with them. Pick up a pair and see what all the hype is about. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon, and you can get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/idle. That's buyraycon.com/idle. For 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds, buyraycon.com/idle. Now, let's get on with the results. The telephone lines had only been open for 2 hours, but during that time, almost 7 million calls had come in. There was over double the amount from the previous week. My favorites to move into the top 10 were Justin, Kelly, and Alexis Lopez. The judges had been asked who they thought would get the most votes. All three thought it would be Justin. Sure enough, when the envelope was opened, it was Justin Guarini's name inside. "Who will be next?" Ryan asked the judges. Randy thought Angela Peel. Both Paula and Simon thought Alexis Lopez. The second envelope was opened. Kelly Clarkson. What was amazing, that moments before this result, during a Ford-sponsored Focus on the Contestants video, Kelly had been seen driving down the street in a Ford Focus, shouting out,
"Everybody wants to be me, because I'm an American Idol, baby!"
Now, whether this was scripted or she just did it off the top of her head, I don't know. But it was certainly extraordinarily prescient. There was a lovely moment during the show when Gil admitted he had a major crush on Paula and asked her out on a date. Paula said she was thrilled and said that she would be honored to go on a date with him without any hesitation. I was positive that wouldn't be allowed. I mean, no one on the production team was allowed to fraternize with any of the contestants. Okay, judges, who will be the third person that will be going to sit on that empty chair and moving into our top 10, inquired Ryan. All three judges now thought that it would be Alexis Lopez. The envelope was slowly opened, and the name on it was, shockingly, AJ Gill, who had not sung well at all. Remember, he'd sung the national anthem on his original auditions and got straight through Pasadena, but here he was now, moving into the top 10. While Randy and Paula applauded the win, Simon leant back in his seat, arms folded, with an incredulous grin on his face. When asked by Ryan what Simon thought, he said,
"I think he's a nice kid, but I think, like last week, the voters have made a mistake."
I don't believe Paula actually went out on that date with Gil. But he wouldn't be the last contestant that would ask her out, or even go as far as to say that he was dating her. But that's another story. So Justin, Kelly, and AJ Gill would be moving on to join Tamira, Ryan Starr, and Jim Vararos. Simon was not best pleased, believing that AJ and Jim just didn't deserve their place in the top 10. Out of everyone that had been auditioned, they were not the best. I can't say I disagreed with him, but we both knew the whole ethos of this show was that the American public would choose their own idol. And whether we liked it or not, we had to respect and accept that decision. And a young man who was very happy to accept America's decision was my next guest, Jim Vararos. Welcome to My Idol Memories.
Hi, everyone. Nigel, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Now, before we go into detail regarding what actually happened on that first semifinal, I'd like to take you right back to your first audition in Chicago.
Oh God, do we have to?
What made you audition for American Idol? You didn't know anything about it, did you?
No. So I was going to Columbia College at the time, and I was majoring in musical theater. And a friend of mine had heard about an audition for some show called American Idol. And Paula Abdul was a judge, and I was sold. And here's the thing. I was never planning to be a pop star. That was never my goal. But I kind of just went because it seemed like fun. And I think we all have this inner desire to prove something to ourselves. And at 19, I, you know, wanted to see what this was about and sing something that was not so pop. It was a little bit more jazz and kind of bluesy.
Sure. Beautiful Nat King Cole number.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, you know, the whole question was, what would someone not know about you just by looking at you? So I talked about my parents. I talked about my family, you know, and my parents both being deaf and me growing up being very much, you know, their interpreter for so many things at a very young age. That was just my life, you know. I didn't know any better. That was just... I didn't think that should have been a big deal, but it kind of became that way.
Yeah, well, don't forget that we really pushed the backstories because that's how America got to know you. And
right.
It was America going to be voting, so they had to know who they were voting for. So it was never just about a voice on American Idol. It was about a story, too.
Yeah,
and that, I think, other shows in America hadn't actually picked up on. You just came out, sang, and that was it, you know?
I mean, I'll be honest. I think that because of the way that you crafted the first season, I don't think any other season has truly replicated, I think, the stories behind the contestants. I think for us, ultimately, I truly loved our group because I knew who they were. And I don't know if you get that same sort of connection with other seasons.
Right. Interesting point. I think we did with certain contestants.
I mean, I'm biased, you know that.
Yeah, of course. Now, you say that it wasn't your goal to necessarily be a pop singer. Mm-mm. What did you want to do?
I mean, I don't know. Who knows at 19, you know? I mean, I was just this kid from a small town in Crystal Lake, and you hope for big things like Broadway. I think Idol, for me, it was just a positive experience to what it could be like. It's also damning as hell because, you know, it gives you a taste of what could be. And so when you don't get it, it's a difficult transition, I think, for a lot of us. I think a lot of us felt that way. You know, I think I just wanted to be successful. I wanted to, you know, prove to myself that someone from a small town could do something big.
Right. Achieve the American dream.
Yeah.
So you've now come along to the audition in Chicago. You've auditioned and I've loved you signing When I Fall in Love.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the story. And I ask you to sign again when you go into the audition room for the judges.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and you're there because of Paula Abdul.
Totally.
But you've never really heard of Randy Jackson or Simon Cowell.
Not really.
So now, what did you hear before you went in the room about Simon?
Oh, geez. I mean, I think I have come around multiple times on my thoughts on Simon. But, you know, I think for me, it was just more about the competition and like the other singers. And every time I heard a bad singer, I thought, okay, like I'm not that bad. I think I might have a shot at this. And then I think I walked into that room and it was just so weird because, you know, you've got cameras on you and you're looking at Paula Abdul and I'm just like, oh my God, you have no idea like how you got me through life. And, you know, I think you're just very out of body.
You were a big fan of Paula's before you walked in that room?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. Any homosexual will tell you that. Yeah.
Well, you hadn't come out at that point, as I remember.
Well, technically, I mean, yeah, I was. I just didn't have to. I mean, it wasn't like I got on that stage and I was like, all right, homos, I'm here for you. Like, this one's for you. Like, I didn't have to do that. Like, I think even Simon said, like, yeah, we knew you were gay the minute you opened up your mouth. And like a Chanel bag fell out of it. I think, I don't know, something like that he said. So I was like, okay, well, you know, good, your gaydar is good. That's good then. But I don't think that I was never not myself. I was never, I never hid who I was. If someone asked me if I was gay, I would have said yes.
Sure.
And, you know, that's just what it was.
It was never a thing that I actually ever wanted to point out because I didn't want any homophobia coming into it that might affect the votes, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which there is certainly a part of America that would have held back their votes, maybe.
But here's the thing that would have happened now. You know, when I look at future contestants after me, you know, I mean, Clay Aiken was not out at the time, but like Adam Lambert, you know what I mean? Who is amazing.
Phenomenal.
These are two super talented guys that, you know, wanted to sort of not make it about that and just sort of be, you know, these great talents. And I have nothing against that. In this day and age, I mean, in the political climate that we're in right now, there's so much work we still have to do. Yes, we're in a better place, but I came out 18 years ago. You know, this is 2002. So, you know, reading those message boards, we didn't have social media. We didn't have Twitter or Instagram or any of that. So we had the message boards and literally people would say, do not read them unless you want to cry. And literally every day
you read them,
look at them
and,
I would suck my thumb and I would be in fetal position and I would cry because I didn't understand why all these people just hated me and I didn't even do anything. I was just some effeminate or, you know, not as masculine a guy that they saw. So that was really, really hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand. So what did they actually say to you after you'd sung, Jim? Do you remember?
I think they were all kind of very nice and complimentary. I think Paula really liked it. I think she said something about my tone. She said that she really liked my tone. And then I think everything else just seemed very like, yeah.
Yeah.
You'll do.
It was, and your tone was beautiful. I mean, you had good breath control. You sang it. And of course, for me, the story behind you with deaf parents and signing and the fact that I think you said your one wish was that your parents could hear you one day.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, growing up as a kid, Nigel, like, you know, when my mom would be driving, she'd constantly, like, just rest her hand on my throat. Just like, because I would sing in the car all the time. And she would just want to feel something and just want to, I think, relate to something somehow. And that was just, you know.
The vibration. She would feel the vibration,
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, it was beautiful and you got through. And I must be honest and say I was keeping my fingers crossed for you. So now you've gone to Pasadena.
Hollywood, as they say.
Yeah. we always laugh at that. We've always said you're going to Pasadena just doesn't sound anywhere near as good, does it?
It's not as fun. It's not as fun. But here's the thing. That was a wake-up call because, you know, on one hand, I was given I believe I was the only guy that was given a video camera to basically document, I think, my own sort of personal, like, journal
entries,
basically.
A log of what was going on those 3 days.
And I was just like, why me? I was kind of like, I don't understand. Like, you have all these amazing people. Like, the minute I started talking to these, I think it was 120 or 130 of us.
130,
130.
Yeah.
These people, Nigel, you know, like, there was so much f***ing talent in that room. I was like, I should not be here. Like, I'm not good. Like, these people are good. Like, I don't know why I'm here. So even with the backstory, like, there were people that were phenomenal and had a story. Like, and I just felt more and more, like, every day that something is not right here because, like, just hearing these people like sing in the rooms and the hallways. And I'm just like, oh my God, any of these people could get a deal. Any of these people.
But you saw them fall by the wayside as the days went on because the more and more pressure you were put under, and you know very well as you carried on, the biggest pressure is going live on television. And everybody had to be capable of doing that and not breaking down in front of those cameras. So we gave you sleep deprivation. We got you to learn songs you'd never heard of before.
Yeah.
And certainly I was shocked that so many didn't know Stevie Wonder's For Once in My Life.
Yeah. We were so controlled in these environments that I think I just was like, let's get this over with because I don't know what's happening, what's coming next. Like, is there going to be a secret, like, round 17 while we were all locked up in the three rooms, you know? And it was just like, what's going on? You would hear like the claps or like the cries, or it's like it was so, again, being 19, you know, from a small town, I was like, I don't know what's happening. It's hard to process. And I think we were all just trying to process, basically.
Yeah, the crazy thing about the three rooms was I think there was 15 in each of the 15, three rooms.
Yeah, yeah. And there was a yes, solid group, yes. And then there was a no group. And then there was like a kind of so-so group. And I think I was in that.
Which was also a yes group.
Yeah.
But we just didn't want you to know that.
Right, right.
Pressure again, nerves, pressure, whatever we could put on you to watch you withstand, to be frank with you.
Well done.
It's more than talent. As you rightly said, there's some great singers there.
Yeah.
But it needed more than that to actually make the program.
That's so true.
So you now come into semifinal one.
Mm.
And you sing the same song.
Yep.
And Simon is not particularly happy with you.
No.
Do you remember what he said?
I don't remember if that was the time that he said, if you would have won this competition, we will have failed. Was that when he said it?
Yeah.
Yeah. 18 years, I remember that.
Yeah. A tough line.
Kind of like, okay. You could just say no thanks. Like, you know, but I get it. It's Simon, whatever.
So then you return to the Red Room.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to wait until the next day to find out how America voted.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, Simon walks into that Red Room and speaks directly to you.
Yep.
Tell me what happened.
To the best of my knowledge, and Nigel, you might have to help me, he basically said that they were changing something, a rule, and they were basically saying, we are going to vote someone off basically based on the judge's opinion, and Jim, you're that person, so you are actually going to go home before America even gets to see you. And I think we cried. I was very close with a lot of people. I mean, there wasn't one person I didn't really
get on with.
That's just not who I am. So I legitimately felt like pain, and I felt hurt, and I thought that was so unfair. But again, it was a show, and I was just like trying to just be like, okay, like, I guess this is it. And oh God, it was bad. Like, it was just very sad because it just was so abrupt. And it was so like,
as I remember it, Simon walked in the room and said, Jim, you're cut, turned around on his heels and strode out.
That's
and it was
it.
Like,
that's all it was.
What the hell's just happened?
Yeah.
And then every one of the 10 burst out crying. Even the guys were like in shock and in tears and what the hell's happened? To the point that Ryan and Brian should have stayed in that Red Room with you to say, good night, everybody. Been terrific tonight. Wonderful. But the tears and the screaming, the girls were like. So we had to move Ryan and Brian out into the other part of the studio to wrap up.
Yeah.
What you don't know then is I immediately took that because I was totally against doing that. As far as I was concerned, we'd promised America that they would have the vote, and here we were taking it off them. And so I went back that evening and re-edited everything together and called in Mike Darnell, who you remember as the Fox executive, and said, Mike, this doesn't work. This is changing a format for no good reason. Let America vote. And thank goodness he totally agreed at that point. And we called you all back to the hotel. And what was quite funny is Kelly Glover said to me, you're reinstating him? I said, yeah, we're reinstating him. So will he now be voted for by the public? Yeah. And I don't think she was necessarily too happy about you being reinstated, which was ironic because come the actual vote, she was fourth and you were third.
Yeah, she should have been there in my place for sure.
Well, she had an opportunity. She went into the wildcard show, so she was given a second opportunity.
Right.
So how did you feel when we reinstated you?
I don't feel like that's an emotion that you can really give one adjective to. I just don't. I think it was just a roller coaster of emotion because I was still processing what had just happened. And then you reinstate me, and then America actually decides that, like we do kind of want to see a little bit more of Jim. I think there's always been a part of me that was just like, maybe I shouldn't have made it. I knew that there were just better people. And I think for me, I just like, this was about a competition and it was like the best singer was not me. And, you know, I think...
Jim, yeah. You've got to understand that America didn't know everything that had gone on. America didn't know you were cut and reinstated.
No, I know.
America is just judging you on your performance in front of the judges, also taking on board what the judges said. And you got America's vote. So don't deny yourself anything because America took to you and loved you. End of story. And then, of course, when we move into the top 10, then again, you're up against 9 other great singers.
Right, for sure. And then I went home.
and then you went home.
Yeah.
Did you continue watching the show?
I did. I voted, I think, almost every time.
Did you have any idea at that point who might have won the show?
For me personally, I have always loved Kelly. And, you know, I got to kind of chat with her a little bit on the early days, like in Pasadena. So, like, I knew that she was something special the minute she opened her mouth. So, I mean, I kind of thought it was going to be like a Tamira Kelly situation, like in a final two.
I was Tamira and Justin, I think.
For me, it would have been fun to see like a Tamira kind of Kelly final two.
Yeah.
It makes sense that Justin was in the final two, but I think Kelly was by far, you know, the standout for a long time since I first met her in Pasadena.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. You and Randy Jackson said the same thing. I don't think the rest of us really noticed Kelly until she sang Natural Woman and hit that beautiful Minnie Riperton note.
You know, that
Bird Calls a whistle note.
Yeah, she's just amazing, that girl.
Yeah. And then you were brought back for the finale at the Kodak Theater.
So fun.
How was that? How was that for you?
You know, once you're off and then you, again, this was, we're guinea pigs at this point, right? So I didn't know that we were coming back. I didn't know that there was a finale. I didn't know that we all got to be on an album that was released by RC. I was like, I'm sorry. It was like win after win. And then I was like, oh, I get money for being on that. And then it was like, oh, wait, there's more. There's also a tour. And like, you're going to go too. Like the best was yet to like come. And like, it was like this gift. And I was just like, I can't believe I get to do all this. Like how amazing of an opportunity that like I get to perform for people and, you know, and sell out arenas and make a little money, you know, and like, which when you're 19, you know, you feel like you're, you know, a gazillionaire, even though, you know, you blow it all like an asshole. Like I did. But no, I mean, like that finale was amazing. Like she, you know, it was an amazing moment to be a part of. And it's funny because, you know, 18 years later, there are these screenshots of like that day and I'm hugging her and like a lot of them. And all of us are just kind of like, you know, enjoying the moment. And this is like, it's historic. I think for us, we were part of that. We were all a part of setting the stage for 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up to.
Of course.
Season
97. I mean, don't forget, the entire production team had never done a show like this.
Right.
It was nearly all American, apart from myself and Kenny.
Mm-hmm.
And they were used to scripts, which obviously we didn't have. We just shot everything as it happened.
Right.
And also we were learning about how Americans reacted. And for us to be in the Kodak Theater as well, the home of the Oscars, was fabulous. I mean, we were achieving our dreams at the same time as you guys were.
What a ride, though. What a f***ing ride.
Jim, it's been wonderful talking to you.
Thank you, Nigel.
I've really enjoyed it. So God bless. Stay safe in this terrible time that we're living through. And look after yourself.
Thank you, Nigel. You do the same. It was good to talk to you.
Thank you. Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, next week, prepare yourself for the biggest bust up between Randy and Simon. And Randy will be rejoining me to give me his point of view 18 years later. Until then, stay safe. Subscribe to My Idol Memories on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. And remember to rate us and be kind. Thanks very much for listening. Cue music.